Hello, everyone. Welcome to Revive Health's Daily Briefing Live for Thursday, April 9th. This is our 30-minute review of the latest, most important news, resources, and advice for health system marketers and communicators who are dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Chris Bevelo, Health System Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I'm joined, as always, by Chase Kluckner, Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hey, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Glad to have you back today.
Yeah, glad to be back. And we're also joined today by Steve Taliano. Steve is Assistant Vice Chancellor at UC Davis Health and oversees communications and marketing for the nationally ranked health system in Sacramento. He joined UC Davis Health a little over 2 years ago after spending nearly 20 years as a healthcare communications consultant. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me to join today.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming. We're really looking forward to the conversation. So as with each show, we plan on covering the latest news on COVID-19 and how it relates to marketing communications. We're going to provide some resources. Most importantly, we're going to share what we're hearing and seeing from MarCom professionals across the industry, and in this case, in particular, from Steve and UC Davis Health. We want to make this an interactive forum, so you can ask us questions. Use the Q&A queue in Zoom, which is at the bottom of your window. And at any point during the conversation today, just put your question in there and we'll get to as many of them at the end as possible. You can also use the chat function to talk to other attendees. But if you'd like us to answer a question, make sure you include it in that Q&A queue only. Chase will also be using the chat function to post any relevant links that we mentioned, so you can access those as we talk. As you know, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. That's probably the easiest way to get it. If you are like me, a podcast freak, that allows you to listen to it whenever it's convenient. You can also find a recording of the video of the show on our website. We post that every afternoon after the show. That's thinkrevivehealth.com. The specific communications hub that we've developed for all COVID-19 related content is actually at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. A couple other important notes that we always mention before we get going. We are not experts on COVID-19, so not a place to come for medical or scientific advice or resources. But we do have opinions on how marketers and communicators may want to manage this crisis. Just keep in mind, everybody's situation is different, as we know. Your organization's different, your market's different than others. So keep all of that in perspective as you think about the things we're talking about today. So as we do, we're going to start with news, and we always start with a count of cases, both globally and in the United States. We do that just to help keep that overall perspective in mind. Of course, we're still seeing things go on an upswing, and that shapes, you know, how we think about all of this. Once we make the turn and start going to the downswing, that will also change things in what we're doing and how we think about it. Of course, all relevant to wherever you're at in the country and how things are hitting you. So we use the Johns Hopkins University tool. And right now we are looking at globally 1,506,936 cases and 90,057 deaths. The United States continues to see a dramatic increase, though, of course, we are hearing hints of plateauing in places like New York, which is a good sign. But we are now nearly triple the next country, which is Spain. We have a total of 432,596 cases confirmed. Of course, those are confirmed, and we see a lot of stories about we probably have missed a lot, because we haven't been able to ramp up testing as quickly as we wanted to. So that's probably higher. And our death count is still going up. It's at 14,831. And there's even stories about how that's probably low because we haven't been able to attribute all of the deaths that have come through to COVID appropriately. So we're going with these counts because that's the Johns Hopkins number. But again, all of that is relative to the situation. So another news item we wanted to share, and Steve, you brought this to our attention, so I'm going to ask you to kind of speak to it. It's actually two news stories. The first is a story that hit on the 8th, so that was yesterday, from Pew Research Center, about how 54% of Americans rate media's response to the outbreak positively. And you had drawn a contrast to that from a story from Gallup from March 25th that had news media rated the worst among entities in terms of where people are looking for their information or trusting their information. So do you want to speak a little bit to that gap and how things may have changed?
Yeah, and while they may seem like they're totally different, this is often one of those cases that I think we find in healthcare communications where both are actually true, in that the media survey from Pew asked about the media and different forms of the media, and people said they're doing a good job at about 54%. And the Gallup survey was slightly under 50%, but then it asked about a whole bunch of other entities. And for healthcare communicators, I think the good news is that hospitals were on top as the most highly rated. And that a lot of people see hospitals and healthcare systems as the best place to get information. So I think it's a real good opportunity for all of us in the business to really understand people are looking to us to make sense. And while there are definitely a lot more people tuning into the media, and we're seeing that in the media ratings, there's a lot more news consumption going on. And as a result, we're all feeling a lot more coverage, an unprecedented level of coverage, really. It's people are also looking to us too. So we are, in a sense, media outlets also. And we need to take advantage of that opportunity to use our credibility and tell the right stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we did a survey, boy, it's been a while. The first time we did it was, I think, the middle of the third week in March. And we just redid it last week. And so folks can go see that survey, but it was a national survey of consumers. And in both cases, the first version, and then we redid it just to see what changes there were. To your point, hospitals and health systems were the top rated in terms of trust, where people trust, and also just a craving for more information from our organization. So to the point of these stories, and I think to what you're saying, Steve, and then our own survey has shown that at this point, I don't know that we've saturated the desire for information. Of course, we've all got constraints on what we can do, and we can't dedicate all of our time to that, but there's still opportunity to provide support, to provide information, and on a more frequent basis. I mean, folks are looking for it at least daily from hospitals and health systems. I mean, people tease me all the time because my first book was Joe Public Doesn't Care About Your Hospital. Today, Joe Public cares about your hospital. They want to hear it every day. So that's a good thing for us in a very bad time, but we can rise to that occasion, I think, fill that need. So great. Again, just want to remind people of that survey. You can go find the updated report and other information at our communications hub, which again is at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. We have the results of the survey there. That's where we post all of the recordings of this podcast, including recaps. So if you want to kind of go back and just skim the recaps, you can do that to find maybe one that's relevant to something you're dealing with right now. And we also put out information twice a week, a bulletin that has more thinking in a written format. You can subscribe to that as well. So all of that is there. So check that out. All right, Steve, let's dive in a little bit. There's a number of things we want to cover with you, but why don't you start by just catching people up as briefly as you can on the things that you all have been doing at UC Davis Health since this crisis started.
Sure. So taking a lot of the research that you all have done and that we just talked about, we really are starting to look at this as if we are our own media outlet. And so we're publishing a lot more of our own content, and we've organized it both into, a coronavirus center where I think a lot of people have, and they have, a banner up and here's where you can go and all that stuff. So we've certainly done that. But then we've really upped our presence on social media to distribute that content. So we're doing a lot more on Twitter because that's where the journalists are, and we want them to find it. And they're certainly looking for all kinds of stories. And like I mentioned, they're hungry for all kinds of stories about coronavirus and what's happening. And as an academic medical center, we actually have a lot of good things to talk about. We've developed our own testing. We're working on serology testing. We're able to study the virus. We've actually grown the virus in media. So now we're able to study that virus and how it behaves and learn from it. So we can learn as we go based on having the whole university behind us to bring that to being more than just a hospital. But that said, we did set up a home base for content. So that's our newsroom. And then from there, we're syndicating content out across all of the platforms and channels. And then we've converted our marketing over too. So we had a brand campaign that was in market. It was a very high-level, feel-good, patient-centric campaign. But we've taken that down now, and really it just didn't fit with the times, mm-hmm. and converted it over to a PSA campaign. So our marketing team has done a lot of really great work to quickly flip it over into a wash your hands campaign, into a donate blood campaign, and some other community centric messages that are real important, you know, right now, and fit better with the time. And the reaction to that has been really, really positive.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's something that, you know, we've been talking about as well on this podcast, just the need and the opportunity to be relevant with the messages that are out in market. And that's a perfect example of that. I will mention too that there's a number of links that people can follow to check out the stuff that Steve's talking about, and Chase is posting those in the chat channel. So just check those things out there. You know, what you mentioned, obviously UC Davis as an academic medical center, and some of the things that you're able to do with research there. We haven't spent a lot of time in this podcast talking about how, you know, we talk about hospitals and health systems, broadly speaking, but obviously there are all kinds of different organizations, and academic medical centers is their prominent part of our health system. Let's spend a little time there. And then there's another way that you all show up based on your status as a public entity that also changes things. But let's start talking about the AMC part. You mentioned research. In what other ways do you feel like this is kind of hitting you differently, or are you able to respond differently given your AMC status?
Yes to all of those things. So we have two schools on our campus in addition to the medical center. So both of those schools are essentially closed. They're doing online learning. So we have a whole student community that we have to communicate with, and that's very different than the patient community. And then there's a lot of crossover because we have residents and fellows who are students, but also who are helping to treat patients. So it adds some layers of complexity to it and into the messages that we're trying to communicate, especially when we talk about the school essentially being closed, but the hospital can't close, and the hospital workers right. don't get the day off or get to work from home. So we've had to really nuance those communications and try to stratify and target in much more precise ways than we had to do before. So that's been a real challenge, and that's something that we're working on. The upside is that we have additional spokespeople that we can use. So, you know, if we were only a hospital, our subject matter experts are actually managing a crisis. So freeing them up for media interviews is incredibly difficult. They have a crisis to manage and everything else to deal with. So the dean of our School of Medicine, who is a neurologist and also happens to be an MBA in addition to being an MD, has been a great spokesperson. And while there's still work for her to do, she's not as tied into the daily operations and function of the hospital. So she's been great to talk about testing. She's been great to talk about the research that we're doing. She's helped to convene some of the other departments across the university. So we brought together biomedical engineering, animal sciences. We actually have a vet med researcher who's been researching coronavirus for almost 20 years.
Oh, okay.
So she can talk to him and pull that knowledge together across the university. So now we have all of these great research things to talk about, and that helps to feed that hungry media beast with positive stories. So yeah. One other change that we've made, that people might think about, is we made a decision early on based on lessons we had learned from responding to labor strikes to peel off two members of the news team to only dedicate them to mining for and telling proactive stories. So while the rest of us are caught up in the daily soup of responding and dealing with crisis, and we do this in labor strikes too, we peel off a couple people to say, pretend this isn't happening. Go find great stories and drive the narrative as if this weren't happening at all. So it's a bit of a counter-programming strategy, but it's incredibly helpful because otherwise we wouldn't be getting any positive stories at all, and we'd be driven by the media's appetite for negative stories as opposed to continually finding these positive stories that we're doing and putting them out there in ways that people can then pick them up and use them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think it drills home a point that we had our Samantha Pierce from our media relations team at Revive on a couple of weeks ago and talking about, of course, you want to be really smart about reacting to media requests, but there's an opportunity to be proactive, maybe more so than ever. And that's just a fantastic example of how to do that. That's great.
Yeah, because if you don't make it someone's job, then everybody's going to be dealing with reactive stuff. So it's hard, but like paycheck withholding, you sort of don't miss it when you don't have it at the beginning. So we haven't noticed that they aren't there to respond on a daily basis. And it's been incredibly helpful to drive the narrative.
That's great. Reminder to folks to put questions. We already got a couple of them in the queue, so that's great. As we go, we'll get to as many as we can. Usually we have time for one or two at the end, but we try to keep tabs. And if we can't get to them today, we'll get to them at another time. The other thing that you've brought up and we talked about, Steve, a little bit before jumping on here was your static as, and I may be saying this the wrong way, as a public entity. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk about that and the responsibility that brings and maybe some of the challenges that brings as well?
Yeah, it does. So we're part of the University of California, obviously, which is a public entity. So we're subject to Public Records Act requests. And as soon as all of this happened, we were just deluged with Public Records Act requests with people wanting, what are your emails? What are your internal documents? That kind of stuff. And we're still trying to sort through all of those, frankly, because there were just so many of those that buried the legal team. But it is a challenge in that we have to remember on an ongoing basis, every email we write is publicly disclosable. And documents that are finalized are publicly disclosable. So we need to make sure we're taking appropriate precautions to frame, even in the context of emails being sent back and forth, frame things appropriately, because these will ultimately be subject to some form of PRA and disclosed, and then people are going to be looking at them absent context. And we have a pretty activist newspaper here that I would say is borderline unfriendly to us. So they like to take things and, you know, really paint them as they see them, as opposed to how we would like to see them. So that's fine. We just know that that's the environment in which we have to operate. And then we have to make sure that we're planning for that as we put these things together. And so we've seen a number of internal all staff emails, for example, either get disclosed by people who will send them out. So you got to write all your internal comms bulletproof as if you're writing them as external comms. And at the same time now, you know, they're going to be subject to Public Records Act requests anyway. So it's good that we were thinking that they might get leaked, because now we're going to have to essentially leak them as a Public Records Act request.
Right.
So it just adds an additional layer of scrutiny and review and thinking that we have to put through. But again, with this appetite that the media has, and I think even though we have to disclose, people should really be mindful of the things that they're creating and writing and sharing an email could well be disclosed by someone else along the line, because there's just a huge appetite for all kinds of what's happening in the hospital stories right now.
Yeah. So some challenges. Talk though a little bit about, you had mentioned some of the ways that your status as a public entity allows you to maybe collaborate differently. And you had mentioned a town hall. Maybe you want to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so working with one of the other health systems here in town, we actually pulled together the four CEOs from the four health systems that serve the Sacramento area. And we approached the local NBC affiliate about it, and they were very interested in running it. So they ran a 1-hour live town hall with all four CEOs from all four health systems. They used four different setups, so they didn't put everybody in the studio, so you're able to maintain the proper physical distancing. So we had our CEO in a conference room and everybody else was in their conference rooms. But we just heard back yesterday from the TV station, it was the highest rated program on at the 7 to 8 o'clock hour. They were very pleased with it. And it was just a great opportunity to show the community that all of the hospitals are working together on behalf of patients, which is really what we were hoping to get out of it, to show the community, we're not all competitors, we're working together behind the scenes on behalf of patients to figure out how do we load balance, how do we share resources, how do we do all those things. And the idea kind of came from an internal town hall that we've been doing. So we set up one of our folks here had the idea of doing kind of a fireside chat series, right? Thinking back to those radio addresses from World War II, about just doing a Friday noon town hall. So we're doing that with our leadership. So every Friday at noon for 30 minutes, we bring the leadership together. We do a WebEx town hall. We make sure they're physically separated in the town hall, so we're living our behaviors.
Right.
But it's been incredibly well received. The first week, we actually had more than 2,000 people hit the WebEx and was maxing out the capacity for one meeting. So right. We apologize if you were on that Friday. We're the ones who crashed WebEx. But it's been incredibly popular since, and we've taken to recording it like what you're doing with this podcast, so people can view it and consume it on their own time frame. So that's really helped too. But we want to make sure that people see that leaders are visible and out there. The other lesson that we took away from that, though, was that wasn't enough. So we really found there's an appetite for mid-level subject matter experts, so people who aren't seen as leaders, but people who are subject experts. People want to hear from them too. So this week we're putting our chief of infectious diseases on. So they don't see him as hospital leadership, but they do give him credibility. And now he'll be able to help deliver some of the messages we want about proper precautions and things like that.
Yeah. That's a great idea too. That's not something we'd heard before, but so important to have leadership in front of the entire organization, because we know that in some cases we've already seen with systems that division, there's always kind of a us versus them mentality that can get really exacerbated when there's PPE shortages, when there's, you know, your public entity. So any kind of talk of, like, not that you may have this, but others, financial struggles, furloughs, that kind of thing, can really make that a pain point. So having them accessible to the team, but also bringing forward other folks makes a lot of sense. Talk a little bit about, you know, we had a really interesting conversation, I think, about the relationship with the media. And we spoke a little earlier about the opportunity, not just to react, but to be proactive, but also in a way that now hospitals and health systems, hospitals, we'll say, physicians, it have really become heroes and at the forefront of the consciousness of this country, rightly so, because these are the organizations that are seeing us through. So a lot of the things that in the past might have stuck in a negative way haven't, because most people don't blame these organizations for shortages of PPE, for example, and all that kind of thing. So talk about some of the opportunities that the situation is giving you, or that you're seeing in terms of the relationship with the media.
Yeah. So I say this as a former reporter, the media is a fickle mistress, right? So right now they're making heroes out of healthcare workers. But my real worry is that there will come a time in the not too distant future where all of these surgeries that have been delayed are going to come back and be blamed on hospitals and health systems. And they're going to say, why didn't you do cancer surgery when you could? And now here's someone who has stage 4 cancer when they could have been operated on earlier. So I do think there's a time coming where there's going to be a significant turn on that. And I'm worried about that. And so what we've done is taken the opportunity to really start pushing back a bit harder on the media right now. So we've had a couple really negative and unfair, and I would even say inaccurate stories. So we've pushed back pretty hard on a couple of those. One of them in particular on Twitter. So if people want to go to our you know, UC Davis Health Twitter stream, or we'll post the link. We really pushed back hard on one particularly inaccurate and negative story. It was quite sensationalist. And we don't usually do this, but I think this is the opportunity to do this. And I'll give you one example with our local activist newspaper who doesn't like us very much. They ran a story of one of our healthcare workers, and I'm sure this is happening everywhere. They ran a story from one of our healthcare workers saying she'd been infected at work and how dare we and that kind of stuff. And, you know, the nurses union had put her up to that, which is your common antagonist in this. So we said, okay, well, that's fine. Here's our statement about it. And they ran one sentence out of the statement. And it wasn't a, you know, a mammoth statement, but it was a good solid couple paragraphs that really explained it. And the one sentence they used was, we're looking into it. Right. And that's it. And so we really pushed back hard on that. We published a statement on our website that said, here's the full statement that we provided to the Bee. And then when they tweeted about that story, we posted that link into their Twitter feed, their stream, their post on that, and said, well, here's the real story. Here's what we really had to say. So we took a little bit of that insider and the real story thing, which is all hot right now, and used it back to say, well, here's what the Bee left out of their story. And here's why you should read our statement about that. So the coverage downstream from that has been better. They've used our full statement in other stories. So I do think, you know, within the right sets of judgments, we do have an opportunity to be a little more bold about correcting the media record. We do have the credibility right now, and we should explain to people why we have that credibility. And we should justify it by showing fully in transparent ways, here's what the real story is. And you might not be getting it in some of this unfair, inaccurate, sensationalist media coverage. So let's correct the record where we can and tell the story the right way.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's really interesting. We follow a number of national media sources that have really made going after hospitals and health systems kind of their focal area, in particular in costs. And we were seeing this really ramp up in 2019 tied to the really the political situation and discussion of Medicare for All and that kind of thing. And it's been interesting to watch them during this crisis, because some of the stories have been talking about the stimulus and like, oh, here are these hospitals kind of, the first one was like, here are these hospitals begging for this money. And then the subsequent one is like, oh yeah, because they're losing millions and billions of dollars. And like they kind of had to come around and acknowledge like, this isn't a handout to a bunch of greedy organizations as they had tried to portray before. So it will be interesting to see how long this holds. And when we come out of it, how some of that spotlight turns back to kind of a negative filter, because that is the perspective of that's going to sell more papers or however you want to put it, right or wrong.
Right. The media is a business and they're hurting. And so they need to do what they can do to drive traffic. And unfortunately that often comes at our expense.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to get to at least one question. We're at 25 after, perfect timing. This is a question that came in and I think this is great. I'm going to throw it to you, Steve. Then I've got a POV on it. In this time, what's more important in distinguishing your health center from another? Should we focus on leading in local coverage, or is this a time to elevate your brand on the national level?
I would say for us, it gets to what our overall strategy is. So for us, we have been and are in the process of defining our role in the marketplace versus the three other health systems. So it's an opportunity to do that. But it's also an opportunity to help up-level the national reputation. So we find UC Davis is pretty well known on the West Coast, and we're not so well known on the East Coast. So this is an opportunity for us to show what we're doing and how it's relevant on a national scale. And we have several national leaders on our faculty. So I think we're trying to tell both of those stories, and that's part of the reason why we've peeled off those proactive people to try to do that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, it's kind of weird to talk about some of this because we're kind of back in the realm of marketing strategy and brand strategy and thought leadership strategy. And so not to kind of distance from the crisis we're in, but oftentimes we hear of clients that want a national reputation. Mm-hmm. Maybe there isn't a one or health system that doesn't want that to a degree, right? But it always comes back to what is the benefit for you? What is the reality of that? So kind of go back and to answer that question, look to your point, what were you aiming for before? If national prominence or profile was something that was really important and you had real business goals and metrics tied to that, then if there's a way for you to garner national reputation opportunities, great, that makes sense. But I don't know that it makes sense to strive for that just because you're in the middle of a crisis. Mm-hmm. There needs to be something for you to actually contribute at that level, and it needs to align with whatever your business and marketing goals were in the first place. So maybe that's kind of a textbook answer, but I think it's important to remember.
I think it gets back to the key rule, which is never waste a good crisis, right? So it's very easy to get sucked into the crisis and responding all the time, but it's always a great opportunity to do some things if you stop and think for a moment.
Yeah. All right. So I think we're going to wrap right there. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. That was fantastic.
Sure. Before we leave, I do want to give a great shout out to our marketing team. They've turned into a great sign and flyer factory for us, and we would be nowhere without them. So the marketing team, while a lot of times can get sidelined in a crisis, our marketing team has been a spectacular partner in this.
You said that they had come up with a nickname or a tagline or something?
Yeah, they've rebranded themselves because that's what they do as Signs R Us, no order too small, no deadline too short. So I think nice. It's an appropriate way to rebrand signs and flyers because we've needed literally dozens of new ones across the entire health system. And they've returned their energies into that. And they've just been a spectacular partner in all of this.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we're going to sign off with a little note to everybody like that at the end, like we do every time. But just want to thank you again for joining us and taking the time. Appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Chase, again, thank you, sir.
As always.
You are taking a day tomorrow, a much deserved day. So we're going to be joined by Jaleesa Reitz, who's going to step in for you as producer, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And we have Tanya and Andreas from UCLA Health. Do you know her, Steve?
I do. She's great. She'll be way smarter than I am. So definitely tune in for that.
I'll tell her you said that. She's going to come in tomorrow. They were behind a neat Team LA effort that I've seen all over the place. So she's going to chat about that. So remember to visit our website for recording of today's show. Check out iTunes and subscribe to the podcast. Let's make sure you let other people know about it. And like we say every time, the work, Steve, that you're doing, your team's doing, and all of the folks like you out there is so essential to your organizations to get through this. But I think even more importantly, communications is so critical to this country getting through this pandemic. We have to have timely and accurate communications from our healthcare leaders, and that means hospitals and health systems. So keep up the great work. Hang in there because we know it's really tough. We will be back tomorrow and every day that this crisis is going on until it all passes. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we will talk to you tomorrow.